It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Hey, welcome to Money for Lunch. I'm getting two different types of feedback. My engineer is telling me that the show does sound okay, but I keep hearing like this underwater thingamadoodle sounds like, sounds weird. So if you're hearing what I'm hearing, I apologize, but it seems to be, what we're having to deal with until, I don't know if they're going to, you know, they're not hearing what I'm hearing. So anyway, good to have you here. It's a blessing to have you here. I'm always glad to have you guys here. And because of you, our listeners, we get great show topics, great show guest suggestions from you guys. So I appreciate it very, very much. What's happening? Well, let's see. We're getting ever closer to the holiday season, right? Halloween kicks it off. So we have Halloween, then we have Thanksgiving, and I think somewhere in there there's Passover, and then there's Christmas, and probably several that I'm not aware of. But anyway, I don't know about you, but it's shocking to know that the year is quickly coming to an end. Let's see. I'm just figuring this out for you guys. I just thought I was curious to find out how many days we have until Christmas. So we have 74 days, 13 hours, 27 minutes until Christmas. So I think that what is approximately 80 days until the end of the year is still a very short amount of time. It is just mind blowing, and it's evidence of how old I'm getting when time is flying so fast. It shocks my senses. All right, well, enough about that. Let's get into the show. Dr. Bill Schieman on the show today. Dr. Bill Schieman wrote a very interesting article, Five Secrets to Fulfilled People Use Every Day. Five Secrets that Fulfilled People Use Every Day. It's available on moneyforlunch.com. It's one of our featured articles there. And Dr. Bill Schieman, CEO of Metris Group. He is a thought leader in the human resources area, human resource, employee engagement, and fulfillment, and author of Fulfilled Critical Choices. Oh, let me rephrase that. It's called Fulfilled Critical Choices, Work, Home, Life, scheduled to be released nationwide October 1st. So I guess it's already been out there and doing well is what I'm assuming, because it's one of those areas that we all are striving and we all want to be fulfilled. Dr. Bill Schieman, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you for having me.
You bet, you bet.
The book is out, by the way.
Yeah, and the book is out, available at Amazon, is what I'm assuming.
It is, and we were delighted to see it was trending in their top 1% the first weekend.
Nice. Always good to be to be trending. Best-selling author on Amazon is a good indication that the book will do well. But I want to talk about this because I was really shocked. I mean, I've heard, Bill, multiple times that a lot of people are unhappy about work. But I want you to talk about this because your research found that less than 20% of people feel fulfilled, not just at work, but in life generally. Talk about this. What is going on? Why is this?
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, we were a little bit surprised, too, because we've been doing work with the Metris Institute for, 25 years now. And we know engagement scores at work are down, that people are less engaged or not fully engaged with the work they do. But more often, it's really not the work. It's what's around the work. So it's company policies. It's a bad boss. It's, you know, no promotion, no learning, no growth, a whole host of things like that, or just fear that, you know, job will be eliminated. But this study, as we looked at the whole lives of people, we also discovered that there's other factors, and one of the big issues is the tension between work and non-work aspects of their life. So, you know, if they've got issues going on with a marriage, or they've got issues going on with kids or with illnesses, you know, that spills over to work, and the work stuff spills back over, because what we heard from these people is, at least from over 95% of them, that, you know, my work and my life are just totally intertwined. And if something goes wrong on one front, they all affect the other.
Yeah, sure. And I think everybody's experienced that, where if you're headed out to the office or you're headed out to school, and all of a sudden, for whatever reason, there's some contention there. And depending on the level of that contention, that argument, that disagreement, whatever you want to call it, it will send you in a spiral, right? All of a sudden, you know, the traffic is worse. You're showing up late. You're just not, you know, you're what do you call it, dealing with this negative feeling. And it's a terrible way to start the day or start the school or whatever.
Absolutely. I think the other big factor is we were surprised how many people had been sort of caught up in a rat race of daily activities and had not stopped to really think about, where do I want to be? Where am I going? You know, what's my vision? What would bring fulfillment to me? So if I'm unhappy today, it also first requires you to stop and say, what would really make me happy? And having that longer-term vision. Among the people we interviewed, and even those who were successful in jobs, the people who were most fulfilled had a vision of where they were going and, you know, real clear values about who they were, and had been working on a plan or a process for kind of moving down that path in their life.
Absolutely. Let's talk about this. The five secrets of being fulfilled, you obviously interviewed, did a bunch of research. Let's talk about the five secrets fulfilled people use every day. Let's go through them all.
Sure, I'm happy to do that. The first one, as I mentioned, was having a plan and strong values. So this sense of who am I, what do I stand for, where am I going was the first one. And without that, it was hard to do the other things because you didn't know where you were going. And, you know, you expect that to some extent with folks coming out of school. They're experimenting in their life. But, you know, when you're in your mid-40s and you still don't really have a sense of where you're going, you really get that, in many cases, depression setting in with people. So, you know, you took somebody, a great example is somebody like Andre Agassi, the great tennis player, you know, talked about playing tennis early in life, being good, but, you know, his heart wasn't in it. He was being pushed to, you know, to perform by a lot of people, and then he quit tennis. And then, you know, he thought about his life and got things together and decided he wanted to come back and really not only perform tennis but also be a great instructor for kids. And he came back with a totally different level of passion and enjoyment in his life and talks about how much more fulfilling that was to him. So values and a goal is number one. The second one is resilience. And, you know, 95% of the people we talked to said, I've had a setback in my life. Could be work, could be a marriage, could be illness. But the fulfilled people had found a good way to get around those setbacks that everyone has. And some of the biggest things that they used were having a mentor, having really good, you know, relationships with either family or friends, people who would, or truly not just your Facebook friends of, you know, hundreds of people, but instead people who might, you know, be the ones that would bail you out of jail if you needed them to. It was having that kind of support that really helped people get around the setbacks. A third one was risk-taking. So interestingly enough, I mean, people are generally not big risk-takers, but the people who we found were most fulfilled looked back in their life and said, you know, there was a point where I took a risk, and some risks didn't pan out, but some did, and I really learned a lot from doing that. It stretched me. It moved me beyond my limits. One of the fellows that we knew as an astronaut, his name is Don Thomas, who obviously spent a lot of time here in Houston, and I had the privilege of watching him lift off from Cape Canaveral four times. Here was a fellow that, you know, from the age six decided, I want to be an astronaut. And he went to engineering school and got a job with an engineering company with AT&T. And, you know, great credentials, but got turned down like three times for the astronaut program. And he decided to pick up, you know, get rid of a great job, move to Houston, begin the network, get in with the right groups, and finally, in the fourth time, was selected to the program. So, I mean, he's a guy who, you know, risked a lot because he really believed in what he wanted to do. And then the fourth area is this issue of building great networks. I think more and more today, we found that fulfilled people have broader, richer, deeper networks than people who are less fulfilled. Loners tended to have a tough time and be less fulfilled in many ways than those who had a richer network. And then the last one, Bert, was giving back. And it was probably a bigger factor among Xers and baby boomers, was this sense of giving back to other people. And I had seen this group in New York City. It was called Rosie's Kids, Rosie's Theater Kids. And the backstory from the volunteers there was that, you know, so many of these kids came from homeless. They were either homeless. They came from abused families. They were in crack houses. They were had no sense of purpose. And they brought them into this program to help them kind of learn a skill, which was singing, dancing, and being together and having a support network. And when you see these kids perform, you know, take a look if you're interested at Rosie's Theater Kids, and you can see some of the performances. And interviewing some of these kids afterward was just amazing to see the turnaround. But the volunteers who worked on this felt an incredible sense of fulfillment in what they were doing to help enable others, you know, to reach happiness. So those were some of the five key areas.
You know, what's interesting to me, this number four, having a bigger network, that to me makes total sense, because we as human beings, we're social creatures. When we're left to be by ourselves, even though, quote, that can sometimes be easier, not better, we tend to start having more and more negative thoughts. I think that if we're left alone long enough, you know, we'd probably, you know, either kill ourselves or just die of loneliness. So I could see a loner not being fulfilled because, you know, when you look at some of these other things you mentioned, giving back. Well, if you're a loner, you can't give back. There's nothing there. You're also not taking any risks. You probably don't have any clear goals. And, you know, and then, you know, so you have limited values. To me, it makes total sense that a loner is going to be completely unfulfilled, even though he might think his life is simpler / easier / better. The reality is it isn't.
Yeah. What was interesting among the, particularly I'd say Xers and baby boomers, was this sense of, you know, I get so caught up in my work and other aspects of my life, that the only time I started to think about really networking was when I was out of a job and I needed to go network to find people. And most of them said, I was really sorry that I did not do this as a constant activity so that when the time came, I already had a network and I could reach out to it. So many of them, especially during the Great Recession here or more recently with jobs, you know, that are either outsourced or changed, really wish that they had spent the time doing that. And I think we are in a world today where it's easier to have a lot of kind of very casual, distant electronic friends, but building a network of people who will take your call when you really need them, that's pretty important.
Absolutely. Isn't that the most important thing? I mean, it's pretty worthless to have 5,000 friends and really none of them are able to help you.
Exactly.
Let's talk about this. Kind of give me the catalyst for this. I mean, you guys, you're sitting around, you know, and what started you down this process of trying to discover fulfillment?
Yeah, it's interesting because most of my life, either my academic life or my company life or my consulting life, was spent looking at companies and strategy, and then looking back down at people in terms of things you needed to do to be successful. And we had, you know, discovered over the years three big factors. One is alignment. Are people aligned with where the company's going? Number two, are you building good capabilities that, you know, deliver value to customers, whether your customer is somebody internal or external? And third, people engaged, you know, in what they do. And then I had a client who came up to me one day after a presentation we did, and she looked at me and she said, Bill, I've been diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, and they're giving me 5 months to live. And I was, like, devastated. You know, I had tears coming down my cheeks, and I knew this person a long time. But, you know, she is somebody who took many of these techniques and things she'd been doing in business and applied it to her battle to survive cancer, and she beat it. She's somebody who was at a celebration party we actually had yesterday, and somebody who now has been in remission now for over 6 years. And
wow.
And the it got me to thinking about really looking at not only people from what they're doing in organizations, but looking at their whole life and examining that and looking at then what happens when they do go to work, how does it affect their overall fulfillment. And what was interesting, Bert, was that these same three factors came up, but in a little bit different way. That alignment, for example, if people aren't aligned with the values of the place they're working, or they can't buy into the vision of where the company's going, or the vision of their boss, it doesn't work. It really kind of kills fulfillment. If what they want to develop is their skills and competencies and is not the same as what the company needs, the company's forcing them to go to training programs they don't want to, you know, they don't care about, or they're not helping them grow because everyone wanted it to grow, then it doesn't work. Or they don't have passion about what they do. I'm doing this for the money and not because I really like the job. We had so many stories of people coming back and saying, you know, I went for the money and not for the thing that really I enjoyed doing. And that really makes a big difference.
Yes, absolutely. You know what? It's so funny because I was talking about that earlier in the week. I spent the first, I want to say 15, 20 years of my life chasing the money, because that is one of the elements of success. And in our society, people with money are deemed to be successful and powerful and loved and, you know, and appreciated and stuff like that. You look at somebody, and I don't mean this in a political way, but you look at somebody like Donald Trump, and a lot of people, including myself, really liked and admired Donald Trump. And then now that we've gotten to know him a little bit better, then we realize, maybe not so much, right?
So
that happens all the time. We see somebody on that surface level, we think, wow, that guy or that girl is so cool, their life is so great. And then when we start reading more and more about them, we realize, you know, their life is screwed up. I don't want that. And I'm not saying that Mr. Trump was chasing money. I'm saying I was chasing money, and because it is something that is so glamorized in our society. Just think what would happen to the planet in general if other values were just as televised, glamorized, as popular. You know, I think that we would have a lot less crime, a lot more happiness, a lot more fulfillment. But, you know, straight out of school, you're kind of, you know, you're being told to chase the money, even though I remember in my first year of college, last year of high school, multiple teachers telling me, don't chase the money. You're not going to find happiness there. Of course, when you're young and dumb and know everything, I just snickered at them.
Yeah. And it's easy to get into the trap because, you know, you first go for the jobs with that, then you get into you're developing a family and commitments or maybe purchasing things that kind of are beyond your immediate reach. And so all of a sudden the money becomes a demand on you, even when you may be at a point where that job is no longer, you know, valuable or you're having issues with relationships, and but you can't shift at that point in time. And so many parents that I interviewed talked about giving their kids that exact advice of, you know what, take some time, find out what you really love doing. And you know what, if it doesn't pay the most or as much as something else that you don't like doing, you know, don't take it. You're going to regret it later in life.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those lessons that, you know, you have to learn. And sometimes if you're like me, sometimes you don't learn it until it happens to you multiple times. Let's talk about this because we're out of time, Bill, but I wanted to give an opportunity for you to so our audience can find out more about you. Where can they get a hold of you or reach you or connect with you?
Sure. They can check out my website, which has also information, you know, on the book at wschiemann, S-C-H-I-E. M is in Mary, ANN.com. And also, we have a Facebook page called fulfilled.criticalchoices. And that includes contributions by all kinds of people talking about fulfillment and a lot of resources that people can check out.
All right. So they can go to BillSchiemann.com.
Yep.
And they can go, what was the other one? Critical Choices?
It's Facebook page at fulfilled.criticalchoices.
Facebook page, I'm sorry, say it one more time.
Fulfilled.criticalchoices.
I love it. Dr. Bill Schiemann, thank you so much. And I can't wait to have you back on the show, talk more about fulfillment, because it's really what it's all about. Dr. Bill, thank you so much for stopping by.
Absolutely. Good talking to you today, Bert.
You bet. Good stuff there from Dr. Bill Schiemann. You can find out more about his book as well as find out more about him at Bill Schiemann, S-C-H-I-E-M-A-N.com. The book, Fulfilled, Critical Choices, Work, Home, and Life. And it's, you know, it's really what we're all about. Ultimately, what we want is that feeling of fulfillment. And we're going to take a quick break here to fulfill some of our, we'll call it responsibilities, and then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, it was nice.
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we are back. Good stuff there with Bill. My next guest, Kate Stalter, rhymes with Walter, and that's important because I almost made the mistake of calling her Slater, but it's Stalter. Kate Stalter is the founder of Better Money Decisions, an asset management firm with offices in Albuquerque, Santa Fe, New Mexico, and Scottsdale, Arizona. She is an investment columnist for Forbes, U.S. News and World Report, TheStreet.com, and Seeking Alpha, and host of the soon-to-be-launched America Talks Money podcast. What a great show name. Kate Salter. Welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hey, Bert. Thank you so much. So happy to be talking to you today.
You know what? I'm excited to have you here. And I want to, to me, this is such an important thing, and I love the fact that your show is called America Talks Money, because as Americans, and I think this is a global thing, but definitely in America, we really have a weird love-hate relationship when it comes to money, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. No question about it. And I think, you know, for the population that we are working with right now, which is folks who are maybe approaching retirement or newly retired, it's funny, Bert, because all of a sudden people who maybe throughout their lives had felt very counterculture, very much like, well, money doesn't matter, all of a sudden you're looking at, you want to retire, you're maybe in your 60s and you're thinking, I'd like to wind down my work career at some point. And all of a sudden, at that point, money does become a little more important than it had been a few decades ago. You know, it just does.
Oh, yeah, it does. Yeah, you know what? And it's amazing, too, because I remember it seemed like forever to, you know, to go from, let's say, being 7 or 8 years old and to being like 20 or 21 seemed like forever. But going from 20 to 40 was a blink of an eye.
Right. I think it just accelerates the older you get, doesn't it?
It does accelerate. I mean, it's so funny, too. And what's really interesting, too, is you know, we start planning things further in advance, so it adds to the acceleration. I mean, right now, we had a meeting this morning, and we're making plans for March already. So
yeah,
it just goes to show you all that stuff really tends to accelerate the time. But I want to ask you this. In your opinion, what is the biggest challenge that boomers face when it comes to our money or their money?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting one, because I think a lot of times when folks will ask me about that, and I think particularly in this day and age we're in right now, you know, people are concerned about the economy. Obviously, we're in election season, so all of this stuff is right in the forefront at this moment. But, you know, honestly, Bert, what really over time, never mind that people get very nervous right before a U.S. election, over time, what really, really, really makes the biggest difference is somebody who can manage their emotions around money, you know? That's really the biggest issue there, is a person who, like we were saying just a minute ago, that they're looking ahead saying, wow, you know, I'm 65. I have to make my money last for maybe another 30, 35 years. Longevity is a big issue in America, and we could talk about that. Happy to address that anytime. But it's
absolutely
really,
you know what,
it's so
interesting that you mentioned this thing about emotions, because a lot of people, first of all, there's that myth that money's all about being logic and all this other stuff and being analytical.
Yep.
And really those are all emotions, because logic and being analytical and logical help us to feel as though we are, you know, have a little bit more certainty and that we understand the risk better. So those are emotions too. But it's so important because, you know, if you are, let's say, scared, right, then your investment strategy is going to be completely different than somebody who's confident or feels as though they have more time on their hands or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting
mm-hmm.
that you mention emotions, because I'm a big believer that emotions make or break us all the time.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, you brought up something interesting there, because I think what happens a lot, what you see people doing, is making an emotional decision but trying to justify it with logic. And that usually doesn't work. And usually, again, in this day and age, you know, we're in an era where people just feel fearful about their money. They just do.
Yes.
It's almost like if you're kind of – if you say I'm an optimist, you get laughed at and you get mocked. So it's very fashionable to be fearful right now. And so people go out and look for something to justify the idea. Let me give you a perfect example of this to bring it to life, okay? So – back at the end of 2012, I like to ask people this question. Nobody remembers what the big panic was at the end of 2012. It's been so long ago. It's been 4 years. Nobody remembers anymore. But at the time, the news media were all scaring people about the fiscal cliff. You remember that, Bert?
Yes.
Yeah, right, the fiscal cliff, that Congress wasn't going to come to a deal and the markets were going to tank, the economy was going to tank. So people were out there. They had gotten back in maybe after 2009 if they were fortunate, and then they sold off a lot of their investments in the end of 2012 in anticipation of a market wipeout. Well, guess what? It never happened, and 2013 right. was a great year. So they were fearful, but they tried to make that decision to kind of cover it up with logic about what they thought the fiscal cliff was going to cause. So it doesn't work. That's one of the biggest examples I like to give about this interplay between emotion and logic when it comes to your investments.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting too, back to this emotion for anybody who's young and thinks, you know, I want to kind of focus on this, because this is, I think, a common mistake. It certainly is for me and a lot of people that I know, is that when you're young and you think that, man, retirement is such a long time away, it's going to get here quicker than you think, and you're going to need more money than you think, and you're not going to have as much time as you think. So now is the time to invest. Now is the time to start to get a hold of somebody and get some help, because now is really all you have. And so I just wanted to throw it out there, just because hopefully one person may hear this and say, you know what, maybe I should start now. I really want people to do that. Let's talk about this. You talked about the biggest challenge is this emotional connection to money. Let's talk about some more specific things that baby boomers are facing, and some more things that they need to be aware of. Give us some more thoughts.
You know, I alluded to this a minute ago, Bert, but longevity is absolutely one of the biggest challenges facing the boomer generation. The number of Americans living to 100, get this, grew by 43% in the last decade, okay?
Wow.
That's right? I know. That's insane. I mean, it's still a relatively small percentage of the population, but growing really, really fast. And, you know, again, we work with so many clients now. It is not unusual at all for our clients to come in and be talking about their parents who are in their 90s. So many of our clients, they come in, they talk about, you know, my mom is 94, or my dad is 98. It's just, I mean, on a basis all the time, this happens. Now, here's the interesting thing, though, Bert, is that the prior generation, that kind of generation that maybe, you know, pre-World War II, those folks did a much better job of saving and preparing for their old age. The boomers, as a group, as a whole, did a pretty bad job of it, and that's, you know, but I that's not a newsflash exactly. But you know what? If people are listening to this and you're in your 60s, or maybe your parents are in their 60s, that's still a good time to start thinking about this, because long-term care is really important. Because think about it. If you say a person retires at 65, and that's still pretty common, actually, even though we say everybody's living longer, they're healthy, people still like to retire at 65. They want to enjoy themselves. So you have maybe 30, 35 more years to live. And what happens if you get sick? You know, people think that Medicare will cover this. It won't if you have to go into a nursing home, if you need skilled care. A lot of people say, well, I'm never going to do that. Yeah, well, do you want to be a burden to your children? You know, you better think of a way to cover this. So that is one long-term care is something, your Social Security claiming strategy. You know, the longer you wait to claim Social Security up till age 70, the more you get, particularly if you're married. You and your spouse want to coordinate this. And then again, just making sure that you're not winging this or thinking that your kids are going to help you out, in really preparing very carefully for how you are going to cover decades and decades of living expenses after you retire. It's a big problem, Bert.
Yeah, you know what? It's what do you call it? It's so interesting that that people still love to live in denial. Oh, that's never going to happen to me, and
right.
It's always going to happen to you, right? I mean, you know, if you think your job's going to be there all the time, it probably won't be. But even if it is, you know, and this is the thing that is so funny about boomers, and I think this is why the quote, the great generation did so well, is because, first of all, when they were young, they were dealing with the Great Depression. And then they got into World War II.
Yeah.
So, you know, they weren't just dealing with everyday struggle. They were dealing with some deep level of struggle that most people aren't aware of. And then you have these the baby boomers, and we've had this very easy life. And the hardest thing that we've had to deal with is maybe a year or two of a quote recession, if you will. But we've never had to really struggle. And so we live optimistically that, hey, it's going to work out and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? Every day we see somebody who is abandoned by their children because they did not prepare. They weren't ready. And that's just life. Sometimes what you think is going to happen isn't going to happen the way you think. I cannot express this enough, that this is a common occurrence that gets us all into trouble. Not planning for something is the absolute best way to have that thing happen.
Well, yeah, you know, it's interesting because one of the things that I do talk about with clients is this idea of, you know, it's okay to expect the best. It's okay to go into things with optimistic expectations, but plan for the worst, you know. And there's ways to do this. Like, people will say to us, well, what happens if I buy some kind of policy and then I don't use it? Is it just money down the drain? No, there's ways to structure these things today because obviously the traditional long-term care policy, and I'm sure many of your listeners realize this, the traditional long-term care policy has just become exorbitant and unaffordable to many people. So, but there are life insurance products that you can look at that if you don't use the long-term care benefit, well, then the remainder can go to your heirs. So there's a lot of ways to structure these things so you're not just sending money down the drain if you don't use these. And again, I think this myth that Medicare will cover these expenses, I got news for you people, it doesn't.
Right, absolutely. And again, here's the deal. Things change. You know, the government is in control of Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act. That is under somebody else's control, and they can change those policies anytime they want. For you to think that, you know, that it's not going to change, again, you're setting yourself up for a lot of heartbreak. Kate, we're out of time. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about money and how we can better use it, prepare for it, and all that other stuff. And I want to say, congratulations for your America Talks Money podcast. A lot of success on that. And
Thank you.
Looking forward to have you back again.
I'd love to, Bert. Thanks so much.
Good stuff there from Kate Stalter about better money decisions. She is an asset management firm here in Scottsdale as well as in New Mexico. So good stuff from her. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. Sorry about that. Here I am talking and I forgot to hit the old on button, so I apologize for the extra seconds of dead air. Let's see. I'm getting some feedback. Bear with me, guys. I'm just getting some feedback, and so I want to make sure that we control that. Okay. Anyway, so I apologize. We've had some little technical issues here and there, and for some reason, it seems like I'm the only one hearing them, and it doesn't seem to have been affecting the show. So, all right, good stuff. Sometimes that happens when you're doing a live show. Let's get this thing back on track. Let's get you hooked up with our next guest, Carrie Gray. Carrie E. Gray is a two-decade terminal cancer survivor and author of an in-development biography, How Cancer Saved My Life and How It Now Saves Yours Too. As a former insurance professional, Carrie is today founder and CEO of Greensurance, an innovative health insurance alternative leading a revolution for real healthcare with over 40 modalities of natural medicine, including with conventional medicine. Greensurance is a timely health program like no other. Cannot wait to get into this. Carrie Gray, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you, Bert. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely, absolutely. So let's talk about this. Greensurance, first of all, I love the name. How did you come up with this idea?
Well, you know, it's been a long journey to finally get to this point. It really started when I faced my own terminal liver cancer many decades ago. I was in my mid-20s, and I was diagnosed terminal, given no chance of survival by my medical doctor. Having a family, thinking that this was the legacy I would leave my children is to never be part of their life, it really pushed me to look for alternatives to something. I figured if I was going to die, I would die at least with giving my kids, knowing that I had tried everything. And that's really what took me into alternative medicine. And it's at that point that I had no belief, I had no awareness really of what alternative medicine was or how it worked or if it even worked at all. But the fact that my insurance had also abandoned me when I stepped out of the conventional system is how really this issue became blazingly clear. And that is the fact that if you don't use conventional medicine, you really don't have any financial solutions. So the short version of the long story is that eventually after a year of investing tens of thousands of dollars in my own protocol that I was guided by a practitioner with, not only did I get a second chance at life, but it really gave me the opportunity to understand why the system needs to change and really how it is that it's causing untimely deaths. And I would hate to even guess how many people's lives because of the fact that oftentimes conventional medicine really doesn't have the answers, but it is definitely the only thing health insurance provides when it comes to a crisis in health, and that is just really a very egregious issue that needs addressed, and that's basically what my second chance at life has given me the opportunity to do is now start addressing those things.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know what, and it's so – I've never understood this, why an insurance company would encourage alternative methods, right?
And it's
because they're stuck in that box. But there's so many alternative medicines out there that do work, are very inexpensive, and it's just like for years, insurance companies refuse to even pay or subsidize preventative medicine. You know, they only wanted to step in after you were sick. Well, you know, finally somebody realized, wow, if we could stop people from getting sick, we would save billions of dollars. Well, it's the same thing with green medicine or alternative medicine, is that by allowing some of these medicines to be explored and developed, you may find alternatives that are not only saving lives, but literally saving billions of dollars.
Right. Well, and, you know, I've done a lot of research on this subject, and that was one of the things when I faced my own terminal cancer that I said is, you know, corpses don't pay premiums. I don't understand why you guys are trying to keep me alive. And, you know, to any logical person, it would just seem that way, you know.
Yeah.
But really, the bottom line is, and sadly, you know, it's really to me is such a, I don't even know the word. I mean, it's just so outrageous that insurance has stayed in that mold. But the honest truth of the matter is, after being in insurance, and I can tell you from being on both sides of this topic, is that the bottom line is it's where the money is. And until the shift starts happening and people change the way they spend their money, then corporations are never going to change behavior, because why should they? They will always be where the money is. And as long as people continue to stay in the mold of this is the only thing that we know and this is all we do and, you know, that kind of thing, and really being in a fear-based state, then the situation will never change. And I'll just add this. For me, what I see is that change doesn't happen at the voting booth. It happens at the cash register. And when you look at the entire green revolution, you can see that that's where the shift has really happened, is that you know, when there's demand, then there become solutions. And that's really what this green insurance movement is really all about.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting. I like the way you said that. We do have to vote with our pocketbooks. That's the only thing that, unfortunately, that counts. And,
right,
you know, insurance companies, they're all about numbers. That's what
right.
they do for a living, is statistics. And so they know if they write an insurance policy on me at the age of 21, how long I'm going to live and more or less when I'm going to die and how much that's worth to them. They know the long-term value of an insurance agreement on a 21-year-old as well as a 51-year-old, and they price everything accordingly. And
right.
I think as consumers, we need to do the same thing.
Right, and that's what the actuarials are all about. Absolutely. Yes, we are all just numbers. And but yet life isn't about that, is it? It's about human beings, and that's really what this message about green insurance is all about, is about empowering people with the ability to take one statement out of our conversation, which is, that's not covered by my health insurance. And that's really what the mission statement of what green insurance is about, is to help people realize that we have a lot more power than we've ever been given knowledge that we have. And that's where coming together and, you know, creating change is happening. And it's really through this momentum of empowered people who are being given knowledge and realizing that by coming together and creating solutions, that we don't have to be shackled by the system any longer.
Absolutely. You know, what's interesting is what you said there about taking that little phrase out of the conversation, not covered by my insurance. One of the things that's so disappointing is that the Affordable Care Act was supposed to help with this, right? And what's the point of having a government-sponsored health insurance program if they're not going to step up? Because really, one of the things that government can do is innovate. They can help innovate, right? I mean, that's the reason that these rural countrysides have electricity and telephone service, because they made it happen. They forced it to happen. The same reason that they had access to public schools and they created a busing system to give access. And so let's talk about this a little bit. How do you see green insurance working?
Well, green insurance, basically at this point right now, we have kind of we're in a beta right now. And that basically what that means is that what we've done is we have created an alliance of three nonprofits. We're a fiscally sponsored nonprofit. We've created relationships with two other nonprofits to create a health program that actually is breaking down the barrier that health insurance has created And what I mean by that is this, is that if you understand the difference between a credit union and a bank, you'll understand the difference between what health insurance is doing and what our health co-ops are doing. And that is, we are people-owned instead of corporate-owned. And what we're doing is taking the reins away from a greedy corporation, really, that's what we're talking about here, and putting the power back into the people so that change can really be affected. And so by investing, just as you would in a health insurance policy, you would pay in monthly. That's basically what our co-op members do. They pay in monthly into a health program so that it gives them the services and the right to make choices that are good for them instead of being dictated to by an insurance company about what you can and can't have. And So what we've been able to do is take what's called cost sharing, which is actually allowed by the Affordable Care Act, and it's exempt from the penalty, into this gold standard of healthcare where it isn't just a one or the other, but it actually is all healthcare from conventional to alternative, all healthcare that is actually science-based and evidence-proved. That's really what our focus is how do we bring wellness to healthcare instead of making it a sick care program? How do we create health and wellness, and how do we have that people-powered movement push forward and to create an alternative to what health insurance is? And that's really what this is all about. That's really the crux of what GreenSurance is about aligning people who are like-minded together and giving them the ability to become a self-insured entity.
Yeah. You know what, and to this day, I remember I went to a traditional medical doctor. And I remember when he actually prescribed acupuncture, and it just like I couldn't believe it that this traditional MD was prescribing acupuncture.
Right.
And it just goes to show you we still have a long way to go, but the fact that this guy was prescribing acupuncture, it shows you that things are changing, but it's such a slow uphill climb, isn't it?
Yeah, right. I agree.
So let me ask you this. What do you see for the future of GreenSurance and I'm going to call it the green medicine movement? What do you see?
Yes. Yes. Well, that's a great question. And the answer really is, I believe the concept that money is the root of all evil is really a misnomer, because actually money is a facilitator and it really exposes who you really are. So really what we're doing with the money that we're raising through our co-op, we'll be doing continuously as we continue to raise revenue through private investors and people that are involved in our crowdfunding campaign and all those kinds of things, is that we're right now developing a program that we call AlternaCare. Now, this is something that will be released in the coming months, but what AlternaCare is going to do is it's really going to create an alternative healthcare system that will basically be a rival to the conventional system. So there's a lot of really amazing things that AlternaCare is going to be about, and it's going to change and it's going to resolve. And so it's going to be really exciting as in the years that roll out how AlternaCare is going to really change what we all think we know about health insurance and what health insurance should actually be providing. But it actually is going to be quite a revolution, to say the least, when it comes to taking the bull by the horns and really empowering people with the right to make choices and to choose what is a best fit for them as an individual. So it's really, we've got a very extensive vision for what AlternaCare is going to be in the future, but that's really what GreenSurance is like, our foundation. It's like our community, and what we come from that community is what this AlternaCare program is going to be all about.
I love it. This I love this idea, Carrie, and I love the fact that, you know, you have the foresight, the resilience, the determination to get this done, because this is what needs to happen as consumers. And it's not really just about consumerism. It's not about giving us, you know, another way to necessarily, quote, spend our money, but it's giving us a chance for life, a chance for quality of life. Look, I'm not saying that all medicine is bad. We know that there is a lot of good medicine out there, but we also know that a lot of bad medicine gets in the marketplace. Or let me just take that back. There's a lot of good medicine out there that doesn't work for everybody, and we should be allowed to go and, you know, and find some alternative cures to resolve these issues. And for what, decades now, people on both sides of the fence, both traditional doctors as well as alternative doctors, have said that chemotherapy is not, should not be the only treatment we have for cancer. There are a lot of ways to treat things like, insomnia, pain, you know, that we should be, sometimes good medicine, we all know that really good medicine sometimes still has very negative effects and causes, all sorts of other issues. And so I love this idea. I love Greensurance, and you can find out more about what, Greensurance at greensurance.com?
It's actually mygreensurance.com or mygreensurance.org. Yes, you can find out all the information about it.
I love it. I love it. So they can go to mygreensurance.org or .com, find out all the information about it, and help Carrie and her team make some noise.
That's right. Absolutely. And that's really what it comes down to, is if you want to elicit change, you want to see change, then you have to invest in the change you want to see. And that's really what it comes down to, is that politically we all see how compromise has happened because it's all about special interests. But we no longer have to be emasculated by that. We can now invest in the change we want to see, and that's what Greensurance is all about paying it forward.
I love it. I love it. Carrie, thank you so much for stopping by, and I can't wait to have you back some more. Have you back again and talk about Greensurance and everything that's happening there and how you're affecting change in the world. Greensurance.org for everybody else, and we'll have you back real soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You have a great day. And aloha. Take care. Bye-bye.
Aloha. That's right. Aloha. Aloha. Hey, good stuff there from Carrie Gray, CEO of greensurance.org or .com. She's not, you know, she's making things happen. You know, she's a cancer survivor, or she's victorious, a cancer, victor. Anyway, I love her enthusiasm. I love the fact that she has taken her experience and putting it to work for her. There are so many more things that we can accomplish, and it doesn't take drugs to do it. It just takes some good old green medicine. As always, we appreciate you being here. As always, I want to remember that you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.